it's escapism, isn't it? You get lucky enough to spend 3 months on the back of a motorcycle experiencing a continent and people and food and culture, and you know, you cross a border and the tarmac color changes, the road signs change, the way people dress, the houses, it's amazing. And you get to see all of that on the back of a motorbike.
Join explorers and travelers on their journeys and discover distant places and fascinating cultures. From the highest peaks and densest jungles into the heart of adventure. This is Unfolding Maps with Eric Lawrence.
2 friends, 2 motorcycles, and epic adventures all around the world. In episode 4 of Unfolding Maps, I have talked to Charlie Borman about some of his travel experiences, many of which he has made with his best friend, the actor Ewan McGregor, known from movies such as Star Wars and many more. These trips resulted in 2 hugely successful TV series, Long Way Round in 2004 and Long Way Down in 2007. And now they have finally done it again. Their new show, Long Way Up, depicts their ride from Patagonia in Argentina through South America and North America all the way to Los Angeles. It will be available on Apple TV Plus from September 18th, 2020, globally as an Apple Original Adventure series. In this episode, Charlie shares some of the memories from the trip, and he also reveals some of the unique challenges Ewan and he faced because of making the whole trip and its 21,000 kilometers through 13 countries on electric motorcycles. Please enjoy our conversation. Hi, Charlie. Welcome back to Unfolding Maps. It's great to have you back.
Well, it's lovely to be back. It actually wasn't that long ago that we spoke. I think it was sort of during lockdown, I suppose.
Yes, that's right. Or a little bit before that, I guess.
Was it? Oh my God, time just slides away.
But a lot has happened since, and that is the reason why we talk again this time. But first, let me ask you, where do I catch you right now? I guess you're in the UK?
Yeah, I'm in London, where I live with my family. And I mean, I don't know, I think I spoke to a lot of people, but you know, when we had the, you know, we're coming out of lockdown now and we're allowed to be much more fluid and freer and move around and everything. But I have to say, I quite enjoyed our lockdown. We'd luckily just finished doing Long Way Up in December the 18th and when we came into Los Angeles. And then we got back and had Christmas and then the world changed. Hmm. And we were able to carry on editing and doing our own thing. We got very lucky. We realized that this lockdown was coming. So we had 9 editors working on the TV show. Wow. And so we managed to get them all home with an editing suite so that we could carry on.
Okay.
So it's been an interesting time since I last saw you.
And what about today? Any motorbikes nearby?
Yeah, I just came down from the Bike Shed, which is a kind of restaurant, cafe, kind of club that I'm involved in. So if anyone comes to London, that is the place to be. Very hipstery, cool place to be. Anyway, I just came down from there on my electric live wire.
Wow. Okay. You still use that one?
Well, not the one on the trip. One's in. Well, it was interesting because, you know, when Ewan and I, but because this is what we're here to talk about, I suppose, is.
Well, yeah, let's make a transition to that, because I just want to mention for our listeners who maybe listened to the first episode some weeks, a month ago, or didn't even listen at all. In our first conversation, you told me about your deep and lifelong passion for motorcycles and about some of the many, many experiences you had with and on them all around the world. And of course, we also talked about Long Way Round and Long Way Down, your TV shows. And at the end of our conversation, you said, let's make a deal that whenever the next one comes out, we'll talk again. And well, back then, yeah, we couldn't really reveal what the next one would be, the next show, for contractual reasons. But that has changed now. And that enables me to finally ask the question, what is the next one? You already briefly mentioned it.
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm sitting here because we went in collaboration with Apple TV Plus to make an original TV show with them. So we have our Russ, Ewan, and myself, the 4 of us who have done Long Way Round and Long Way Down together. We got together again and did Long Way Up, and that's coming out on the 18th of September, of, you know, this month. I think they're going to put 3 episodes out, and then one a week after that.
11 all in all, so quite
11 all in all, yeah,
quite a lot of material.
Hours. I know, yeah, exactly. As if one wasn't enough. But so when we spoke, we were in the middle of editing, but I couldn't talk about it. But yeah, so now I'm here. We can talk about it and talk about the experience of Long Web. It was quite funny. I was talking just to a journalist earlier, and I was laughing, and he said, you know, why did you start in South America in winter? And because it was really cold when we started. I mean, we had to delay the start of the TV show because there was blizzards and big snowdrifts and stuff like that. And we said, well, the reason we started down there was because we've done Long Way Round. We did Long Way Down. So we had to do Long Way Up. So we had to start from the bottom. So it was purely just because of the name of the show.
Yeah, you really ran there. Out of titles, right?
Yeah, ran out of titles. And we didn't really think it through properly, you know, because I don't think anyone – and people kept saying, you want to start in September? Really? And we go, yeah, but that's sort of spring, isn't it, in the Southern Hemisphere? But I can safely say that spring does not arrive in the Southern Hemisphere, the bottom of Argentina, until much later.
And I think it was the worst winter you caught since 1994. So also a little bit of bad luck involved.
Yeah, no, exactly. And anyway, but I think it's been a long time since Long Way Round. Oh, a long way down. It's been almost 13 years. And Ewan and I had always spoken about doing another one. But you know, life and work and everything gets in the way of lots of things. And Ewan moved to the States and I was living over here. And we kind of sort of drifted apart a little bit, mostly because of the Atlantic Ocean. And when Ewan was working over here, I was always traveling somewhere around the world. And we kept missing each other. And so in that way, our relationship just sort of kind of slid along. And then back in 2016, when I spoke to you about it before, I had this big motorcycle crash and really messed my legs up. And that took a long time to get back. So it took a good couple of years to be able to start walking again properly. And I was stuck in London and Ewan was coming over to work. And we saw a little bit more of each other. Then he came and stayed in my house. Started off for about a week and then ended up, he was living here for about a month, which was fantastic. And you know, as best friends do, if you haven't seen each other for a long time, your relationship just starts again where it left off. And so we just carried on. And our whole relationship has been based on talking about motorbikes. So our first conversation we ever had was talking about motorcycles. And anyway, so we started talking about that. And we both thought, you know, maybe it was time to do another long way up and something we'd always spoken about. And neither of us have spent any time really in South America or Central America. So we did that. And then we got Russ and Dave over to sort of talk about it, business partners, yeah. Producers. And then Russ said, have we thought about electric? And we thought, Ewan and I thought, oh, hang on a minute, electric. And I don't think the initial idea of going electric was an ecological or a sustainable thing at the beginning. It was like, oh, okay, well, you know, we did the last two with petrol and you know, what would make the next one different? And nobody had really done it before.
And as it turned out, for a reason, right?
Yeah, well, for a reason. And there were definitely a couple of times I'm thinking, why did we do it? But no one had done it. And Russ loves, you know, records and things that haven't been done before and stuff like that. And Ewan and I are quite optimistic and open-minded and ready for any old adventure. Mm-hmm. And we thought, you know, the more we thought about it, the more the idea became a reality. And really what was, and then we kind of went around looking to see who would have the best motorcycle to use. And surprisingly, most of the big motorcycle companies don't really have an electric motorcycle. That is, they have a lot of concept stuff and stuff that isn't necessarily in production properly. And really the people that we ended up really having a good chat with was Harley Davidson of all people. And you would certainly not consider Harley Davidson as electric motorcycle guys. You know, they have big V twins, big loud engines, cruising bikes.
But they also didn't have like a serial production yet of electric motorbikes, right? That at least none that would be suitable for you and your trip.
No, they didn't. I mean, they've been working on the Livewire for about 6 years, yeah. Developing it. And it was, you know, it was them and probably Zero were the only two real companies that had something that was usable. And then when we spoke to Harley Davidson, they were super enthusiastic. And we said, look, would we be able to make it a bit more adventure looking and a bit taller and be able to go on lots of different places, you know, dirt and gravel and road and all this kind of stuff. And then they came back with this most amazing vehicle. And they put a new front end on, made it taller. They put big suspension on the back. They put panniers so we could carry stuff on the bikes. And suddenly they built two bespoke adventure bikes. And then we decided that we thought, well, it'd be a good idea if we had two electric pickup trucks. So we picked up
support vehicles
for Russ and Dave. And we thought that'd be a good idea to do electric. So then we went to Rivian, which hadn't really built a car yet either, and said, would you get involved? Would you want to get involved? And they said they would get involved. And so they accelerated and built two prototype pickup trucks. So there we were in September in the bottom of Argentina with two prototype Harley Davidsons, two prototype pickups. And then Ewan and I had realized that we'd only actually spent about 2.5 hours on the Harley Davidsons in total. That's all we'd ever ridden them. So we'd never really charged them. We didn't know how far they would go. We didn't know how long they would take. We didn't know what speed to go. We didn't know, you know, our mathematics, as neither of us were very good at school. So it was a challenge. And it was in the middle of winter, the worst since the 1990s or 1970s, whenever it was. So it was a big learning curve.
Yeah, a big learning curve. And I mean, you had plenty of time to learn because the route you would eventually cover was 13,000 miles long, or 21,000 kilometers. It went all the way from the very south of Southern America to Los Angeles. So yeah, quite a bit of time to really get a feeling for these machines.
Yeah.
But also, of course, on the other hand, not such a lot of time for learning, because of course, if you run out of power, even on the first day, it's already pretty shitty. So it's not really the case that you really can ease into the trip. So in how far did changing to electric motorcycles impact the trip as compared to your previous projects?
Sure. I mean, I think when we decided to go electric, we didn't really want it to change. We still wanted the freedom. We wanted to camp. We wanted to do all the things that we normally do. And I think when we got to Argentina, we started to realize that maybe that wasn't going to be so much the case, that, you know, each night we would need power to recharge. And there's no, you know, in South America and Central America, there are no fast chargers. And so that was a challenge. And so then we got, along with Rivian partnered up with a company called NL, who put chargers every 100 miles on our route so that people can now do the same route as us and charge.
Yeah. So they remained there after your trip.
Yes, so they're still there now. But then that was good for the Rivians, but not for the Harleys. Couldn't get a fast charge with phase two, where Harleys need phase three for a fast charge. So we could get a charge from them, but not fast. So that was the thing. And then we realized that when it's really cold, the electric motorcycles don't travel as far when it's cold. You know, the batteries don't like cold weather. So that was a learning curve. But what was interesting, when we finally got going after all these delays and cables and worrying about how it was going to work and would it work? I mean, at one stage we're thinking, well, we just can't do it at one stage, you know. Mm-hmm. But so we went off on the first day, got the break in the weather, and we headed out. And that was probably the only day that went to plan. So we left. We found those chargers that we put in, which was by a bakery. We sat and had some lunch and chatted to the guy, and he was a really interesting guy. Got a top up, and then headed off to where we were going to stay that night. And the hotel that we stayed in, you could just plug outside. Super easy. And we thought, okay, this could work. Mm-hmm. And then every day after that, the plan never worked. But I think certainly those first few days were tough. And it a little bit like when we first having petrol vehicles, you know, if you wanted to go from your house, you would fill up with your new petrol car and drive, you know, 60 kilometers away. But then you think, well, will I make it? And then if I get to where I want to go, will they sell petrol there? You know, and would I get back? Because there was no infrastructure. So, and then slowly petrol infrastructure came around, and now you can get it everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I think the same thing's happening for electric now. You know, it's almost there completely, but it just takes a little bit more time and it'll be there. But, you know, for our journey and our adventure, it was hilarious. You know, we'd arrive in places in the evening to plug in and you know, Ewan would plug his bike in one plug, I'd plug it in the other, and the whole of the youth hostel or B&B would go dark. The power would be cut off. And then we'd have to redo it, and then we'd have to find other plugs. And sometimes you would plug into plugs that were just hanging off the wall and, you know, with these little cables going into the wall, and you would put the plug in and you would hear all this fizzing noise, you know, like bzz, bzz, bzz. And it would charge, and you would be thinking, you know, and it was one of the greatest feelings in the world was to plug in and get a charge.
So I guess you also ran out of power a few times.
I never went out of power, but okay. But Ewan, and I'm not saying anything here, but Ewan ran out of power twice. Now he says it's I paid Harley to do something to his motorbike, but
to make it look
I'm
good.
Just
okay.
A better rider, yeah. You know. But no, yeah, we a couple of times ran out, and a couple of times got really close to running out. But then we had other times where there was one time where we were in Peru and we'd gone to see Machu Picchu up in the Andes, and we were just coming down, heading towards Lima, and we got to one of the highest points. We're at 15,000 feet. I don't know what that is in meters. It's pretty high. And then we went from 15,000 feet all the way down to sea level, and went down the whole way, and took us like 3.5-4 hours to get down to sea level. And in that time, you know, we were going downhill all the time, so we weren't using electricity. So we only used 8% of our electric going downhill. And for us, that was just, you know, a marvel. Mm-hmm. And then Ewan still ran out that day, I think. But anyway, I'm not telling stories.
Okay. So, yeah, you tried to reach these power stations that your team set up previously, but you also had to knock on quite a few random houses, right? How did these people react when you arrived there with your big machines? They looked pretty powerful, and asked them for a bit of electricity.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, for sure. I mean, the power points that were put in for the Rivians, you know, didn't really help Ewan and I. They weren't fast chargers. They didn't fast charge our bikes. But so we did use them, and they were handy. But what was really interesting, we were at the beginning very worried about plugging our bikes in and you know, asking people for power. And especially in remote places where people didn't have a lot of money and you know, power is expensive. So whenever we stopped, we'd always ask, you know, can we use a power? And of course, we'll pay for whatever we use. But, you know, the thing was, in just about every single place we went to, not one person said no. Everybody said, yeah, of course, yeah, plug in, no problem. We'd stop off at lunchtime to get a top up, and we'd go to a restaurant and we'd say, look, can we plug in? And we'd plug in, and we'd have a fabulous meal while we're waiting for our electric to charge. And sometimes we blacked out some, cut the power on some restaurants. But people, I think, found it funny. And then they would say, what type of bikes are you riding? We said, oh, we're riding Harley Davidsons. People would just look at you like, what? What, electric Harley Davidsons? And they blew people's minds, you know. And then sometimes we'd stop, and we'd stop in a campsite, because campsites have power, and then we could camp. Sometimes we camped in the strangest places, and we stayed in the most extraordinary places as well. Some really dodgy places we stayed as well.
Last question about the machines. Was the driving experience hugely different from the traditionally powered motorcycles for you? Like, did you ever miss the sound or the feeling of a traditionally powered bike?
I think at first all those things run through your mind, and you know. But when you start riding one thing you realize is that you don't get so tired so quickly. So the noise and the vibration and everything, you don't have any of that. But so somehow you feel much more connected to the road, because the feeling of the road comes through much more clearly. And then when you stop on the side of the road and there's a whole lot of llamas standing on the side of the road, they don't run away because there's no noise. So that connection with your environment is much bigger. You know, when you ride through towns, you can hear people talking on the pavement, and you can hear the town or the city, whereas before you would just hear your motorbike. It's different, but it's nice. I really didn't miss the noise of the engine, I must say.
You mentioned that the very first day of the trip was more or less the only one that went according to plan. That day was you guys leaving the city of Ushuaia at the very tip of South America.
Yes.
How did it feel on that day to leave this city and to be finally on the road again with Ewan after more than 10 years with a major project to film and, yeah, and months of adventures ahead?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it, you know, and by the time we finally got down there and got our heads around the charging and the cables and what you're going to take and what you weren't going to take, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then it was super cold, so we were wearing just about everything that we had. And then you start getting really sweaty because you haven't left yet. And then someone hands you something that you forgot. And then you think, oh, God, where am I going to put that? And I've got no more room. So you're quite stressful. So by the time we actually left, that feeling of relief, you were relieved that you were going. It was like, oh, okay, here we go. You know, and we had Claudio with us,
cameraman.
You know, who's an amazing cameraman, Claudio von Planta. He actually Count Claudio von Planta, and he was with us, and we were going off in this adventure, and it felt very natural and very comfortable. And you, there you are riding off with your friend. And it was that thing that Ewan said one day. He said, I think on day two or something like that, he said, you know, Charlie, I'm just following you, and it's just so nice to follow your back again, you know, and you get used to that shape of that person being in your mirror or being in front of you, you know, and it's a nice feeling to be off on a big adventure with your best friend again. It was lovely. And it's just so nice to finally get going.
Was there anything skill-wise, you know, apart from all the electricity stuff or mentally even that you had to get into again, that you had to learn again about traveling this way?
I think when you travel again, you know, you have to get used to moving again every day. You know, so you travel somewhere, you unpack, you sleep, you get up again and you decide where you're going to go. Because we never really knew where we were going, really. And could never remember the names of the towns. And the Spanish was terrible. We couldn't remember people's names. And, I mean, it was just, you know. So we would sit there and having breakfast saying, okay, well, look, let's see if we can make it to here. That's what we would do. And then something would always happen, you know. But I think it takes a little bit of time to get used to that movement again. And then, funnily enough, when you finish a long journey, you have to get used to not moving again, you know. And I remember when I was in Los Angeles and I met my wife and children and we got to Los Angeles and we were going to spend 2 or 3 days and 4 days in Los Angeles and then fly home. And the first day, I think it was on the 18th, on the morning of the 19th of December, I woke up in a panic because I think, oh, Christ, I'm late. I've got to get downstairs. We've got to move again. And I kind of woke up with that feeling and then realized that my wife was lying beside me and that the trip was actually over. And part of you is really sad that it's over. Another part of you is really happy because, you know, all journeys have a life. You know, a beginning, a middle, and an end. And part of you wants to finish, but part of you would love to just carry on, you know.
As we said, you started in Argentina and you went on to Chile, to Bolivia, Peru, many more countries. And you also spent quite a bit of time, of course, in the heights of the Andes, which stretch for about 7,000 kilometers down more or less the whole continent, the backbone of South America. Talk a bit about your impressions of that mountain range, if you would.
I think if you're a motorcyclist, you know, your dream is to do the Pan American Highway, you know, the South America, Central America, Mexico. And, you know, you kind of dream about it and dream in going through the big plains of Argentina, the Pampas and the Gauchos and all that, and then popping into Chile and then up through Peru and all the way, always crossing and hovering around the Andes. And it was beautiful. And it really was kind of, it lived up to all our expectations. I mean, I think if you had to push me as to which part I enjoyed the most, I would say Colombia just blew my mind and such a cool place. And we didn't quite spend enough time there because, you know, we had to get around the Darien Gap. You can't drive through the Darien Gap or ride through the Darien Gap. And so we took a plane and a boat And the boat was hilarious. We finally got to get this boat. We were going to go up the coast and stop in a couple of towns that you can't get to by road. And there are no roads to get there. And so we arrive with the bikes to put them on this boat to go up the coast. And they'd showed us a picture of this really nice boat that we had rented. And we got there, and then they said, okay, this is your boat. And we all looked at it, and this boat was blue, and the boat they showed us in the picture was green, and this blue one was pretty old. It would be the polite word of saying what it was like. And we said, no, that is the wrong boat. You and then I saw the boat that they took a picture of, four boats away. And I said, no, that's our boat. And they go, no. This is your boat, you know. And then what are you going to do? Argue? Because, you know, you're just not going to get the boat. Anyway, so we have this hilarious time of getting these bikes on the boat. And you know what it's like in South America and Africa and places like that? People just manhandle huge, heavy things and just chuck them onto the boat. You know, there's no graces. And you're sitting there going, oh, that's my boat, my bike. Be careful, please. But anyway, got on the boat and had this amazing journey on this boat. It was just, anyway, you'll have to see the episode. It's very funny. But
I mean, there are many moments like this, even in one of the very first episodes when you try to catch this ferry and Yun runs out of battery.
Oh, yeah.
And he has to hold on tight onto one of your support cars and being pulled by the car to reach the ferry. It also looked a little bit precarious, I have to say.
Yeah, they were already there. And we were, because Claudio, Ewan and I usually travel alone together. And Ewan just said, I'm not going to make it. He just ran out. But he ran out like a kilometer or less than a kilometer away from the boat.
Like 10 minutes before it was supposed to leave.
Yeah. Well, it was supposed to have gone. I mean, we were begging them to stop and hold that hold for us. So we did that. But then Colombia and Costa Rica was amazing. I mean, just amazing. You know, they don't have a military. The money they spend that you would spend on the military, they spend on renewable energy. 90% of their energy is renewable. The first light bulb that ever turned on in Costa Rica was renewable energy. And just such a cool place. And then we went to Panama. One of my dreams was to see the Panama Canal. And I met this incredible lady who's the CEO of the locks. And she was responsible for building the new locks, the mega locks. And you're sitting there talking to her and she's saying, yeah, we built this and we did this. And it's all huge numbers that they're doing to make these things. And as she's saying that, there's this giant container ship just cruising up behind you and you're looking over at it and it's this enormous thing. And those big mega container ships, when they're full, you know, they charge them $1.2 million to go through the lock.
Wow.
Incredible. It's just, you know, everything is big, you know, but then she said that they're very competitive. So they're competitive with the Suez Canal and they're competitive with the price of oil. So if the price of oil is cheap, people will go down around South America. If the oil is a bit too expensive, they'll go through the Panama Canal or they'll go through the Suez Canal. So they have to be competitive. So they're making all these deals all the time. Say, well, if you go one way full and if you come back empty, we'll charge you an empty price, not a full price. And I never knew that it was you had to compete for business. I just thought, you know, that people just had to use it.
Exactly. It's really run like a business. Yeah, that was.
Yeah,
really
it's run like a business, and it's competitive, and they have competitors. I just thought that was it. You just had to do it, and they could charge what they want. But no. Anyway, so that was great fun, and then of course we did some UNICEF projects, which were super important to us, and we did one particular one up in Peru in the mountains with this school and these kids. And the school was developed so that they teach their indigenous language as well as Spanish, so that their culture. So, I mean, there are so many different languages in South America that if you're not careful, they just disappear. And so, this and the importance for school to people who have children is enormous. And so, they developed this school, and this town turned into a big town because people from all over moved to this town just so their children can go to school and get an education. So so it was lovely to be able to sort of spend time with those communities and those people and those children. It was amazing to see.
Well, as we have said, you turned this whole trip into 11 episodes. You spent 100 days on the road, so quite a lot of material. So this question is a little bit mean, but do you have a favorite scene in the show?
It's always difficult, and there were so many moments. I think some of the funniest moments that Ewan and I had was when things got tough. You know, when we were in Bolivia, the road conditions were really bad and terrible corrugation, deep sand and gravel. Nobody likes with big bikes. And we fell off a few times there and that was challenging. And I think the more difficult it is or the more jeopardy you have, the more funny it becomes. So, you know, you and I could talk to each other all the time in the helmet. And, you know, because you were worried about what you were doing, you know, you would nervously, I think a nervous thing, you would talk to each other to sort of help each other along the way. But then at the same time, you were going and you'd have a big wobble on the sand and you suddenly hear you and go, oh my God, and you'd be going, oh my God, you know. And then it became, it used to just be so funny. And so those were lovely moments. I think there was one bit where we went into a place called La Paz, which is in Colombia, which is the sort of one of the bigger towns, and it's built in very high up, built in this big, crazy valley, huge town. And they have these bubble cars or these gondolas which go all over the city, which are like the London Underground. And they're all different colours as to where they take you in the city, and they all cross over each other, so you can change different gondolas to go to different parts of the city. Crazy place. That was pretty amazing. I loved Costa Rica, one of the most beautiful places I've been. Mexico, southern Mexico, the food. One of the best meals we ever had was in this old shack in the car park of a petrol station. We had one of the best fish meals I think I've ever had. And so there was lots of great moments. They really were.
Last time,
I mean, there was one time we went up to look at Machu Picchu and went up there, and it was covered in cloud, and I couldn't walk that well. So Ewan went right up to the top to see if he could see anything, and I went another way, and then it was just cloud everywhere. And then finally, after a couple of hours, Ewan and I met up again, and we were sitting on this wall where you were supposed to see the whole of Machu Picchu. And we looked at each other and we thought, well, this isn't going to happen. And then suddenly the clouds just opened up and there was Machu Picchu in front of us. So Ewan and I always laugh that it was, the clouds were just waiting for the two of us to get back together so that it would reveal Machu Picchu for us.
Beautiful. Last time we talked about your horrific motorbike accident a while ago and about your painful rehab. And in the first episode of Long Way Up, we saw a bit of a footage of that phase. And you looked, if you don't mind me saying that, pretty terrible. It was really quite shocking. Did the aftermath of that accident and your health, did that affect your trip in any way?
I think in some ways, I think the trip was really what the doctor ordered, or I think I needed to go and get on the back of a motorbike and to prove to myself that I could still do it. And we had to change the trip in many ways because I can't, you know, we used to do more extreme stuff, but I can't do that anymore. I can't climb up a mountain. I can't paraglide anymore. I can't do motocross anymore. So we had to change things around, but you know, the always the motorbike has after the accidents, to get back on the motorbike has always been the therapy, the physiotherapy, the focus to get better. And I think when I had my second accident, which I smashed myself up again just before going away, you know, the idea of getting back on the motorbike and riding again, that was what I needed. And so I was never scared about riding. I was scared occasionally when we were in Bolivia and the terrain was getting much tougher because my legs, my ankle and my knee aren't so great. So, and I was worried that if I did have a big fall with all the metal in my legs, that they could bend in all sorts of strange directions and stay there. But you know, I've never let the accidents define me. I've always left them behind and moved forward.
How do you feel today that the trip and the show have been finalized? Because, I mean, the first two shows, they have been done, as we have said, already quite a few years ago. They were pretty successful, maybe to your own surprise. The very first one was done with a pretty low budget, as far as I remember, in terms of filming and editing and so on. So it was really like a passion project. And now it's more or less like, cult. It's just really famous for all kinds of people who like traveling and like motorcycles. Everyone has seen it. More or less everyone loves it, I think. Didn't that also create quite a bit of pressure to now, after all these years, do a third one? And I mean, you did a third one, but it was also, as far as I can judge, a much bigger production, much more logistics, much higher quality standard that you aimed for. Was that in any way an additional challenge for you to be able to enjoy that trip and to really get into the flow?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure. I think when you look at all the logistics and everything like that, that the traveling and the movement and all that kind of stuff was not really that much different to the others. You know, it was very simple. You get up, you ride, you go to bed. And I think for the production value, in the first one, they didn't have GoPros. They weren't invented. And we invented our own. And they didn't have really 4K or drones. I mean, if you wanted to do an aerial shot, you'd have to rent a helicopter, which was for a couple of hours, which was hugely expensive. And then you would just get Ewan and I riding up and down one road, and that was it. And so now, you know, with Claudio, he came with his camera, but he came with his drone that he had in his tank bag on his petrol tank, and it was 4K. And so the technology now, you can film it so much easier. We had these little Osmo cameras that you hold, stabilizing cameras that we use so much of in the filming, and you could ride along holding it with this incredible footage.
Yeah, so, it just makes the footage more stable. It's like a stabilizer, right?
Yeah, stabilizing cameras. Yeah. And so that part of the technology was brilliant because we could embrace the smallness of it and make a much, much better TV show for not much more effort, really. Yeah, and then the production, you know, I think where the production really made a difference was when we got home and we got into the editing and all that kind of stuff, because we shot everything in 4K, so there was so much more we could do in the edit, really. So, but as far as the idea, I think, you know, the electric and the charging of it all changed the trip a little bit. But once we got our heads around that, it was pretty cool. And then it enhanced the experience because we had to plug into people all the way along, and so we met a completely different type of people, or more people. And then the other thing, I hope that the TV show doesn't come across too bikery. I think we really wanted it just to be two friends going off. We use motorbikes, but it could be bicycles or bus or a car or whatever that somebody wanted to use. So I hope it's inclusive. I hope. And I think, of course, all of us hope that, you know, people will be entertained.
You say it's about two friends going off to an adventure, and Ewan and you have been friends for quite a while now. Nevertheless, would you say that this trip has done something for your friendship?
I think for sure. I think we connected again in a certain way. I think after the motorcycle crash, I think Ewan sort of said that, you know, if you have a special relationship with somebody, there's no point in letting that great relationship drift. So I think it's brought us much closer together again, like we were before. I think we're much older and wiser now. So I thought we'd be much older and wiser on the trip, but when we started it, we just fell straight back into just being two idiots on motorbikes, having a good time, you know. which was refreshing, and I loved it. And it's escapism, isn't it? You get lucky enough to spend 3 months on the back of a motorcycle experiencing a continent and people and food and culture and, you know, crossing borders, you know, you cross a border and the tarmac color changes, the road signs change, the way people dress, the house, it's amazing. And you get to see all of that on the back of a motorbike. And then people, the one thing that I will always take away from all these trips is the people that you meet. And, you know, the world is a far safer, nicer place than, you know, North America or Europe try to convince you that, you know, those, there are lesser places, and they're not. They're great places and great cultures and great people, and people live differently and have different philosophy and different ways of life. And then they're different to us in Europe and America, but they're not wrong. They're just different and wonderful. And I think we all need to respect everybody and let people be what they want to be.
Well, that was a very, very nice departing word, I would say. Thank you so much for telling us about these experiences, Charlie. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much for your time.
Do you, I mean, maybe it's a stupid question because this show is just being released, but do you already secretly work on any further projects coming up that you can already hint at?
I think when you do these big trips, in order to, you know, as I was saying to you before, they have a lifetime, yes. They have a lifespan. And that you want to get home, but you don't want it really, but you don't want to give it up really. So you talk about another one in order to make it easy to finish the one you're on. So, you know, we talked about Long Way Down Under and we talked about Long Way Scandinavia or Long Way Scandies. That would be kind of cool. So, yeah. You know, I think we're both young enough to have a couple more in us. I think we'd like to do it.
Nice.
But let's see. Let's get this one out first. And,
yes.
And hopefully people will like it.
I'm sure they will. I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, pleasure. Well, I'm glad. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.